All right, guys, as you can see, I'm here with my good friend, Richard Hawthorne. Now, you already know some of Richard's great accomplishments, but I really want to dive in deep with this guy and pick his brain because I'm interested in how he's been able to do some of the stuff he's done, and I know it'll bring a lot of value to you. So, Richard, one of the ways I always like to start out my interviews is, what is something you're grateful for?
Life.
Life. What about life?
Just life. Being able to be here and enjoy or experience this, you know? I'm just like everybody else, we take this for granted a lot of times, you know? And we're too uptight with things, and we want everything to be perfect, and that's what life is. Nothing is perfect. Mm-hmm. So to say that, enjoy the things that life give me, learn from it, and grow.
Absolutely.
So that's pretty much.
Oh, there's no doubt about that. All right, so of course you're a powerlifter, and I don't know if powerlifting does this. It might. I mean, I know there's a lot of music playing in the background when you do your lifts. Mm-hmm. But not necessarily powerlifting, but for life. If you had to have a walkout song for life, what would it be?
Right now, in the moment, this moment of my life, I don't listen to that much music. Mm-hmm. and I thrive, speaking of powerlifting, and some things that catches people with me is I use no music. Mm-hmm. So to say that, I would say I like natural sounds. I like the quiet to where it keeps me present.
Okay.
So I'm just like that. Not to answer your question, mm-hmm. but that's where I'm at right now. I'm enjoying the now. I'm enjoying the present, and trying to be as best as possible at the present. And that's where I would be if I was walking somewhere and I just wanted some kind of theme music.
Yeah.
I just want to be able to pay attention to what's going on around me.
I like that. I mean, it totally makes sense. You know, because a lot of times when you have that theme song for your life, it puts you in the zone.
Yes.
And you get very laser focused, mm-hmm. which at times can be a good thing. Mm-hmm. But when you're talking about life, I like that answer because it kind of takes a step back and allows you to be present, like you talk about, and enjoy that. Mm-hmm. And take actually a moment to say, okay, the wind's blowing. I can hear the water, or, you know, everybody's busy around me and it's crazy, but I can, you know, still find my solitude.
One thing that I'm starting to enjoy is to things start to slow down. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? Even through hard times, when you stay present, you know, you like moving slow motion and everybody else is moving fast and you can see yeah. your way through things, you know what I mean? So that's what I'm trying to get better at, and that's what where I've been, you know, mm-hmm. lately.
All right, so to kind of dig a little bit into your story a little bit, you grew up St. Martin and...
Cedar Grove.
Cedar Grove.
You just can't say St. Martin. You can't say Cedar Grove.
All right. I understand.
That's legendary.
I understand. I've heard about Cedar Grove before. So you grew up in Cedar Grove. And when did you first get into powerlifting? Like, when did you know that was something that you could potentially be good at?
To back it up just a little bit, mm-hmm. First I'll say I started in ninth grade.
Okay.
But it goes further than that. Mm-hmm. That neighborhood was competitive. Very competitive, anywhere from 15 to up to 30 kids. We had a neighborhood park. So I was one of the youngest and obviously one of the smallest. So at a young age, I had to compete. And in order to play with everybody else, I had to figure out, I had to troubleshoot, okay, I want to play. How can I be good or better than the people that I'm playing mm-hmm. against? So it started from there. So as far as competition-wise and the laser focus. So that there gave me the idea of I can do whatever I want.
I like it.
So, yeah, ninth grade is when I started, and that's the mindset I had going in.
So very competitive, and I identify with that. Because growing up the way I did, being the fat kid, I knew that in order for me to compete, probably the same thing you said to yourself, I got to work twice as hard as everybody else. I have to literally outwork everybody in order to be on the level playing field with them. Is that the way you saw it?
You have to troubleshoot. Kids don't troubleshoot these days.
No. No. Okay, so you develop this mindset, which is something I wish everybody would, and you started lifting in ninth grade.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. When did it click with you that, wow, I could be great at this?
First year, ninth grade, we have three meets.
Mm-hmm.
We have regionals, South State, and State.
Okay.
Regionals and South State. Regionals, I had nobody to compete against. South State, I had two people to compete against.
Mm-hmm.
Pulled it off. And State, it was a full roster.
Yeah.
And I pulled it off by 5 pounds.
Okay.
After that, after State that year, immediately I said, I'm going to be pound for pound strongest person in the world. Out loud.
So in ninth grade, you said that to yourself?
Ninth grade. I said that to whoever was by me. That's what I said immediately.
Yeah. You made that declaration, and then at that point, did you just ingrain that into your heart?
It was there.
It was there.
From that point.
I love it, man. I love it. So in ninth grade is really when you started on that trajectory to accomplish that goal.
Yes.
Okay. So how tall are you? Let's go ahead and clear this up.
About 5'3".
5'3"?
Yeah.
How much do you compete at? What weight do you compete at?
130. 132 is the official class.
132. So 5'3", 132. Mm-hmm. What's the most you've ever pulled?
Most I've ever pulled was 650.
Y'all hear that, right? 650 pounds off the floor at 132 pounds. The reason I bring that up and the reason I want to make such an emphasis out of that is where you get your nickname from, the ant.
Exactly.
Okay, because the multiplier of how much weight you can lift times your body weight. Mm-hmm. But what's important about that is it's so much more than a physical feat. Because when you see, I mean, I've watched you in the cage. I've watched that video probably 100 times. When you see you walking up to that bar, I mean, of course you're in the zone, you're ready to do this, but there's you and there's this weight. Like, just something doesn't add up there. It's a physical feat, but it's so much deeper than that.
Yes.
Where did you start developing the mindset to start believing that strong you could do this? Because, you know, that's what I want to get across to this audience is, what are some tools that they can start using to start working on that mindset? Because there's not, you know, for a lot of people out there, they don't know where to turn to, or they don't know how to get going.
Mm-hmm.
So what were some things you did to start developing that mindset to be able to start just lifting incredible amounts of weight?
it's a little different. Like I said, it didn't transform at a point. Like I said, it was from the beginning.
Yeah.
From being young, just to say, you know, we play tackle football, you know. They'd be all on top of me, and I have my hands and feet on the ground like this. I'm not down.
Yeah.
So it was that mindset, you know what I mean? From then, but to answer your question, what can people do or start to do to get to a point where they can do things that they believe they can't do is, one, me, loving themselves.
Mm-hmm.
It's one thing that I like to say, we're selfish.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? We do everything that everybody wants us to and not know it.
Yeah,
so,
absolutely.
So here's the thing. You got to go to college. Okay? You got to get this. You got to graduate. You got to get this certain job. You got to marry this certain person, a certain girl. You got to get this certain house, this certain car. Okay, that's great things to want.
Mm-hmm.
But one thing is not allowing us to use our imagination. So mm-hmm. one thing is once we stop using our imagination, we stop believing in these outlandish things. And when you stop believing in those outlandish things, you put yourself in a box.
Yeah.
So with that being said, you have to love yourself enough to believe that you can do whatever you want. And the reason why you want to believe it is because a lot of times what I'm saying is, if you don't love yourself, you won't put yourself in the position to believe. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So you got all these excuses and things like this. We literally don't feel like we deserve those things.
Mm-hmm.
So to start off, you got to understand, you got to look at yourself and say, I deserve this. Once you say that, believing in things, it'll be a lot easier.
Yeah.
You know? But to double back with that, I would say that with me, it started from the very beginning, and it's no longer, it was already ingrained in me. But the thing is that I felt that I deserved those things, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So that's where it's at.
So let me ask you this. Why did you feel you deserved those things?
I felt that I deserved those things because I worked, and I worked at whatever I needed to do, you know?
Are y'all hearing that? He worked. So that's one thing I try to get across to people is, you know, a lot of people that have some of these limiting beliefs that we're about to talk about, they don't feel like they deserve them because of... How do you ever feel like you deserve something if you didn't work for it?
Exactly.
How do you feel like I need that, I should have that promotion, or I should lose that weight, or whatever your goal is? How do you feel you deserve that if you've never worked for it?
Mm-hmm.
So because you worked your absolute butt off, you felt like, I deserve this. I love myself enough that I'm going to work hard, and mm-hmm. I deserve to accomplish these things that I have ingrained into my heart.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, one of the big things, like I asked you earlier, is a lot of people suffer with limiting beliefs. And for you to do the things you've done, there's no way you can have limiting beliefs. You can't walk up to that bar with that amount of weight, mm-hmm. have a doubt in your mind that you're not fixing yep. to accomplish this lift, and just pull it up with ease. So let me ask you this. Have you ever dealt with limiting beliefs?
Yeah.
What are some of the biggest ones you've dealt with?
I mean, it's some of the biggest ones I always have doubts. Mm-hmm. Always have doubts, but they never stick with me.
Yeah.
But with limited beliefs, I can't say that I have any, but I have doubts. With that being said, is when I get ready to lift, you know, the whole process is doubting myself. If I don't doubt myself, if I'm not in fear, then I'm not going to do well.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as saying I'm not going to do this, I can't do this, that never comes out. So if I was to say if I had a biggest limited belief is I don't have time for something.
Mm-hmm.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I know I can do it, but if I had time to put into it, that would be my biggest limited belief.
Yeah.
So other than that, you know, I'm never going to say I can't do anything, you know?
Okay. I'm going to ask you about something you just said. So do you use fear as a motivating factor?
Yes.
Explain to the audience how you do that.
So a lot of people think fear is a bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
But we were giving emotions like fear to survive. So that's how you use fear. So put it in light this way is, say you're in the jungle, okay? And you 5 feet away from a bear or whatever, you know
yeah.
what I mean? I can guarantee you would do something amazing that you never thought you can do.
So true.
So that's what it is. So every time that I'm on stage, it's a moment to elevate myself. It's mm-hmm. a moment to either take a step up, or take a step down.
Yeah.
So yes, I'm scared. Everybody expect me to do something amazing. How much pressure is that? You know
that's
what I mean?
Exactly right.
So I use that fear, and I usually start the night before.
Mm-hmm.
I doubt myself all through the night, can't sleep. And then I would wake up doubting myself a little bit, you know. And then as it get closer to that time, all that kind of dissipates.
Yeah.
It just dissipates, turn into focus. And it goes a little deeper. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it that fear, put it this way, anytime that you get to some point, okay, whether it's fear or anger, once you meet it, mm-hmm. and push through it, that's when amazing things happen. So you always have to face it.
Yeah.
And it usually turns out good when you face it. But if you don't face it, it's always going to be there.
It's always going to be there, and it's always going to be regret.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's almost like you're tapping into the fight or flight.
It's not almost, it is.
Yeah.
That's exactly what it is.
Yeah, I mean, you hear these incredible stories. I'm glad you bring this up because I'd love to talk about it. You hear these incredible stories of like, okay, there's a story of like a 13-year-old girl who lifted the car off her dad. You know, like if a 13-year-old girl tries to pick up a car, she's not going to be able to do it. Mm-hmm. But how in that moment was she able to do that?
Exactly.
She tapped in to that emotional response, which caused a surge of adrenaline. It caused all these physiological changes inside mm-hmm. of her body mm-hmm. from an emotion.
Yep.
So my question is, how do we tap into and refine that to be able to use it more productively?
I know how to do it.
Yeah, well, of course.
The reason why I say that, because it's hard, okay? Mm-hmm. And with my experience and in learning how to do it naturally,
yeah,
you know, it's a lot easier said than done.
Of course it is.
But now, there's a lot of things that I do differently. Mm-hmm. You know, I am a different person. I do a lot of meditation. I do a lot of yoga. I do a lot of just a lot of things that keeps me in the present. You know what I mean? Okay. A lot of spiritual things, you know. That's me now, because I know that when I'm not trying to control a situation, mm-hmm. that allows me to elevate. So biggest thing is control. Let go. You have to let go, you know.
It's amazing how much more power you have when you start taking variables out of the equation. When you've got something big to do and you start getting out of the way some of those less important variables and concentrate on that main thing.
Yeah.
It's amazing, because you can derive all your body's energy and power towards that one thing instead of being spread out over 10. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad you said that, because it's so true. When you start doing meditation, start practicing mindfulness, mm-hmm. and being able to slow down the brain's processes and live in the moment,
yep.
it's amazing how well you're able to almost focus your energy into one particular thing. Mm-hmm. In today's world, you know, we're so ADD, we're busy, we're 9 million miles of scatterbrained craziness every single day. So to be able to cut through that clutter and focus on something, you know, that's really what it sounds like you're able to do right now. And
yes.
It didn't come easy, did it?
No, it definitely did not come easy by any means. But those things, you know, I'm going to kind of go back a mm-hmm. little bit. I talked about the imagination and talent, you know. When we're too scared to actually go towards what we enjoy doing because of being selfishly, you know, selfless, or however I would say that. It always get me. But when we're scared to do what we enjoy doing, we lose out on our talent. We all have talent. Okay, and when you tap into your talent or figure out your talent and dive into it, it's much easier to get in that zone. But we're so taught to, get your head out the clouds. Mm-hmm. You see what I'm saying? So it's a lot easier to fall into get into that position when you fall into something you love.
It is.
So it's emotions. It's your heart. It's literally mm-hmm. your heart. So that's the quickest way to be able to tap into that, whether it's powerlifting, whether it's sales, whether it's, you know, anything. When you find your love, that's your life tool. That's what powerlifting is for me. It's my life tool. So I use powerlifting to capture people, not only just capture them, but to show them what we're able to do, not just physically, but mentally. And then that's what's going to allow me to help more people, is because they see this physical thing, mm-hmm. okay? And then they understand it's a lot deeper, and they know that it's more mental, and I'm able to talk to them on that standpoint and have them have a deeper understanding about life in general. Is we all have talents, and that's our life tool to help each other so we all grow and evolve. So that's how it pretty much goes. You know, we're too scared to jump into our imagination, into our talent, in order to tap into what we were given in the first place.
I agree, and I find with a lot of people, it's when they know they have the potential to be good at something, they let fear step in and say, okay, well, this is my talent, but what happens if this thing I love, I'm not really good at, and nobody else accepts it? Mm-hmm. Like if, you know, I'll just use the example of a musician. If somebody is just extremely, extremely passionate about music, they could let the fear of saying, well, what happens if I start making music and nobody likes it? They let that fear just cripple them.
Yep.
And it prevents them from going down that path. Mm-hmm. And what I try to get people to understand, and it's the same thing you're trying to do too, it's about creating your own individual, authentic path to happiness. Whatever road that leads you down, as long as you're doing it in good service and not hurting anyone else, mm-hmm. your authentic path to happiness is the path you're supposed to go down.
Yep.
And that's how you're going to make yourself happy, not worrying about what anybody else thinks about it. But if you're making yourself happy, I promise you, you'll make those around you happy.
You're absolutely right. in lifting, you know, say high school. Yeah, I was good at it in high school. And I lifted all, you know, all from 9th grade to 12th grade. A lot of people, and I continued after. Mm-hmm. I went to JC for a little bit for physical therapy, but I actually stopped going because I was doing a lot of traveling at a young age for powerlifting. Yeah. All over the place. And you know, friends and other loved ones would look at me, and even people outside of that would look at me and say, you know, there's no money in powerlifting. You know what I mean? They wouldn't say it straight up, but I would know, you know?
Yeah.
I can feel it. We can feel things. And I've gone against that, you know, this whole time, you know? There's no money in powerlifting. What are you doing? You need to go to school, which school is great. School is great. Don't get me wrong. School is great. But the thing is you have to be okay with standing alone.
You do.
Because if you can't stand alone, then you can't do anything else. You have to understand who you are and go with it, you know? And that's where a lot of us fall, because we worried about what everybody else thinks. And we can't do that. Like you said, we have our own path, and we have to, we all put here for a certain reason, okay? And if we don't find that path, then we're not going to fulfill what we're here for.
Mm-hmm.
So our tools, our individual life tool, you know, is just that. And once, you know, once you find that and somebody else find this, you know what I mean? That's when things merge and everybody grow as a whole. But we're so selfish, but selfless at the same time. Mm-hmm. It's crazy how it is, but that's how it works right
yeah.
now.
It's true. I mean, when you ask anybody, they want to help people. But they selfishly let all these thoughts, feelings, and emotions hinder them from doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing you've done very well is you use powerlifting as your marketing tool. You use your gifted ability and unbelievable talent in powerlifting be the marketing tool to get across this great message. And one thing that hit me very early on with you was, and you might not even remember this, we were in Southern Elite one day, and me, Chase, and I think Huey were deadlifting.
Okay, yeah.
And I think you worked with us for like 2 hours.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you didn't have to do that. You just took time out of your schedule to help us. And that hit home with me. I'm like, this guy's, you know, at the time, pound for pound, strongest guy in the world. Probably the best deadlifter in the world when it comes to technician and just knowing the mechanics of deadlifting. And he's taking 2 hours out of his schedule to help these guys for no other reason other than to help them. I'm like, that's what it's about. Giving and helping others and using these gifts that we've been giving to make the world a better place. And yeah, I learned deadlift there, but I also learned more about you. And I learned more about that just giving spirit that has become so evident in a lot of stuff that you've done. And I love hearing you say that powerlifting is my tool. It's my marketing. Because I do the same thing. Mm-hmm. My weight loss journey, mm-hmm. that's my marketing. That's my foothold into your world mm-hmm. where I can help you in other areas. Mm-hmm. I can then try to help you and overcome limiting beliefs and your own personal path to happiness. I can help you down that journey once you kind of let that marketing of what I've done in the past influence you. Mm-hmm. And you've done the same thing. So, okay, let me ask you this. You work with people. And I know you've trained people, but you work with a lot of clients and a lot of people, yeah, on physical fitness and powerlifting and those things. But you and I both know the most effective way to work with somebody is to mentally coach them before you physically coach them. So what are some ways that you work with people and help them get past their own limiting beliefs?
The biggest thing that I use is to is body language and breathing. So anybody that I'm working with and they get frustrated or they get overwhelmed, I remind them of their body language. I remind them of their breathing. And when you do that, keep them present mm-hmm. at what's going on and why are they there, you know? And there's ways to do that, you know, with your body language to theirs. There's ways to do that. But once you continue to always keep them present and always remind them, why did you come to me, mm-hmm. you know? And have them control their breathing, it kind of resets the mind, you know?
Yeah.
Resets the mind, resets... all that aggression or being overwhelmed and things like that. So
now when you say control the breathing, because I know I teach breathing techniques with a lot of my clients. I'm a big fan of them. Let's kind of get into a little bit of the technical part. Like, is there a certain breathing technique you use, or how do you go about coaching someone on their breathing, and why is it so powerful?
It's just to put it this way, just to start off with the breath is life. Mm-hmm. So the breath is the connection to the physical. The breath is the connection to the mental. The breath is the connection to the spiritual. Mm-hmm. And like I said, to not go as deep, because I'd be here all day. Once you utilize the breath or understand what it does on each level, then you can do pretty much anything. Now, the technique that I would use is just a simple technique. All you have to do is just inhale. What I tell them is inhale through the nose, exhale through the mouth, okay? Typically, close your eyes when you do it and try to regulate that breathing and try to get all the negative thoughts out your head. Mm-hmm. Why'd you come here, you know? And that's just a little bit of it, because like I said, I definitely would be here all day yeah. explaining that. But I'm also, which I told you, I've been working on a book, and I almost put it out, but I was like, no, this certain part have to go in there. So I've been putting this, actually this segment, what we're talking about, I put that in there as far as how the breath is connected to mm-hmm. all three. But that's pretty much it. It's simple. It's not. I try not to go in depth with them, because you go too in depth with information, their mind shuts off. So you got to keep it. You got to keep it simple. That's pretty much how I do it. Keep them present. Let them know the way you breathing is how you think, and keep it at that.
Okay. So you and I both know that, and I just recently heard this quote said this way, and it made so much sense. Change is easy. Maintenance is hard. So how do you, when you set a goal, that first initial effort towards that goal is the easy part. Making that initial change is easy. Mm-hmm. But turning that initial change into a lifelong lifestyle activity, just something that you do every day or something that becomes a part of your life, is the hard part. How do you get people to make that transition into that temporary change into more of a lifestyle change?
You talking as a coach or as a trainer or as
just with anything in life? What do you feel would be something you could leave everyone with, and even help me with? How do you go from a temporary change to more of a lifestyle change?
First, you have to expose yourself. It's not easy. And it's not a switch. Mm-hmm. It's not a switch. Everything is growth. So, just say if somebody want to, get fit, the number one thing is to show up at the gym. Whether you know what you got to do or not, show up. Whether you tired or not, show up. Mm-hmm. The more you do it, especially when you don't want to do it, go when you don't want to go, that's what's going to change that person over time.
Developing discipline, just to
show up, to take that initial step. You don't even have to do anything. If you just wake up, walk to the gym, and then once you get there, leave, that's a step. You know what I mean?
I agree.
No matter what you do, just get there. Mm-hmm. When you get there, then make your decision. No matter what, just get there. So that's the first step, and that's the most important step, because if you don't take that step, then all the other stuff is not going to go. You have to expose yourself to the environment, and that's what it is. That's mm-hmm. the first step.
Yeah, so it's almost like training yourself to take that first step and to do it without even thinking about it.
Yes.
Mel Robbins wrote a book, and her big thing is she has the 5-second rule.
I know
the 5-second rule.
Yes.
It's basically if you have a decision to make, make that decision.
Yep.
Don't sit around and think about it, because the more you think about it, the more emotions, feelings, fears, thoughts, all that, all those other variables are going to come into the equation and start screwing things up.
It's immediately working against you.
It is.
Immediately. Yeah. I was talking about that quote not too long ago with somebody, but it's the honest truth. And here's a good example of that is when it's time to get up in the morning. Oh. If you don't get up when it's time, the first 5 seconds, either you're going to get up or you're going to lay there, and you're going to lay there not just for a little bit either. So the first 5 seconds of I need to get up, you need to make that move.
Yeah. That's actually where the 5-second rule came from.
Yeah.
She was struggling with all the stuff in her life, and she couldn't get out of bed because she didn't have any motivation. So she literally envisioned a space shuttle taking off.
Hmm.
And that's the way she envisioned herself jumping out of bed every morning.
That's what's up.
And that's how she put that thought and that visualization in her head. And she started springing out of bed, and that's where that 5-second rule came from.
I mean, that only makes sense, because that's the first thing I thought of is that, mm-hmm. is getting out of bed. It's so hard, man. But
it is.
It is what it is.
But at the same time, it's the little things.
It's the little things, exactly.
It's I was on a conference call two nights ago, and that's one of the things we talked about was the compound effects of the little things. Getting up at the right time. Okay. What do you need to do? What priorities do you need to accomplish in a day? And what little things do you need to do to start having that compound effect to get closer to your goals? Because this call was kind of focused around weight loss. And my thing was, just start creating small victories.
If you want to start losing weight or you want to start a health transformation, start creating small victories and make them very small.
Yep.
Go for a freaking 10-minute walk. Yep. If that's all you can do a day, I don't care if it's around your office with your dog. I don't care what it is. But if you can do a 10-minute walk a day, okay, then maybe next week it's 15. Or maybe next week you can walk to the gym or whatever it may be. But start creating those small victories and have that compound effect start working in your life.
It's just like the saying, if you build a house, and this is where I'm at in my life, like I said earlier, is if I'm building a house, you know, I want to stay present enough to make sure every brick is put down perfect. Because at that moment, that brick is the most important. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's the little things. Brick by brick, you want to make sure that brick is perfect in its position, the grout and all that good stuff. Because if not, that house is going to be all jacked up, you know?
Exactly.
So it's about being present. And being present is seeing the small things and tweaking them when they need to at the time. Yeah, there's no such thing to me as, well, literally, I can't just say to me, but there's no such thing as time. There's no past. There's no future. It's always now.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the real time is now. And we're so trapped in the past and the future to where we don't get anything done now,
mm-hmm.
you know? So, yeah, it's being present.
It is.
The biggest thing.
And what's, I know you said you've worked hard on being present. What would you say was the main contributing factor to lead you to living in the present?
Major. It's a bunch of little things. I can't say anything major, but to understand, it was the understanding of when I was learning what I was doing physically.
Mm-hmm.
It came to a point of time to where I was great at what I was doing, and I knew what I was doing without having to think about it. But when I started picking everything apart as far as physically, mentally, and even spiritually, that's when I started to become present. To understand how am I able to lift this, it's a lot more to it. Not just in mechanics,
mm-hmm.
you know, not just in the mental aspect, you know, it's so much more. So being present and being patient enough to really understand what I've done or what I can do is what made me say, I need to learn from my experience, not just do it and not be able to share it, you know, and give it to other people. I need to be able to share it, you know what I mean? So that's what made me, you know, where I'm at now is understanding. It's a bunch of little things that I need to understand in order for me to help other people.
Yeah.
And it's all in me, so I need to pay attention to it,
mm-hmm.
you know? So.
Well, I mean, patience.
Yeah.
We have no patience in our society these days.
None.
It's crazy how much of an immediate gratification world we live in. And cell phones are one of the main causes of it.
Yeah.
I mean, you're literally a 5-second, it's not even 30-second, it's a 5-second Google search away from learning anything you want to.
Mm-hmm.
What's the weather? Boom. How do I do this? Boom. I wouldn't be able to do this podcast right now if it wasn't for Google and YouTube.
Yeah.
You know, that I did all this myself because I learned on there, and I literally could just type it in and learn it right there. And patience is something that not many people have anymore, but they also don't understand the importance of it.
They don't understand the importance of it. It's one thing about patient and technology. They go against each other.
Mm-hmm.
No matter what it is, no matter if it's a rubber band or it's computers, that's technology. Anything that we make to cut corners or keep us from getting the right repetition that we need to do to get things done is going to hinder us in developing something. So a lot of people don't see it that way or understand that, but that's literally what it is. And
mm-hmm.
In the opening of my book, one of the things that I describe is that with cell phones, and myself included, I can't spell like I used to.
Bro, I can't either.
You know? I cannot spell. I cannot remember anybody's cell phone number, but you can ask me all my friends, all my neighbors' phone numbers, landline numbers. To this day, I still remember them. You see what I'm saying? So The thing is that everything that we develop, yes, it's for the better, but right now as a race, a human race, we're not better. It's because everything is quick, cutting a corner, and we're not taking the long way home to understand and be better at what we do. So mm-hmm. It's all about repetition as well.
Yeah, it is. Okay, so you've mentioned this a couple of times. I wanted to bring this up anyway. I've talked about this, but I want to kind of let you bring it to them. Tell me just kind of a brief overview of what exactly your book is about.
Ho-ho.
I know it's about a lot.
Well, it's three levels. This is my actual, other than Southern Elite being my gym, but Core Strong here, this shirt here, is my brand.
Mm-hmm.
And immediately when people see Core Strong, they're thinking of, you know, this whole area, you know, the physical Core Strong.
I think it's physical.
But Core Strong, what it represents is three elements, the physical, mental, and spiritual, okay? And that is your core, okay? Mm-hmm. So what I do is I go into in-depth in all three and how it correlates in the lifting part as well, but also you can learn this format fits with everything, whether it's powerlifting, whether it's gymnastics, whether it's on the physical level, whether it's all these things, powerlifting, gymnastics, yoga, it fits this format. Mm-hmm. But not only that, this whole format as a whole, the physical, mental, and spiritual, you can learn so much about everything, right? Not just the physical aspect of lifting or moving weights or whatever. It's understanding how to tap into your full potential.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, the beginning, it starts in talking about the body from the skeletal system, the muscular system, to the nervous system, and then it goes into, you know, the mental aspects, the different parts of the psyche, and then it goes into the spiritual aspect, and then it puts it all together for the actual lifts at the end. But all in all, what is it actually doing is it's one, showing how important the breath is,
mm-hmm.
how it's tapped into all three, and how you can utilize this for everything. So it's pretty in depth, and
yeah.
And I tell everybody this, that it's going to change the face of not just fitness, but the face of how we look at everything. And I honestly believe it. And this is me, like in ninth grade, I honestly feel that this is my job,
mm-hmm.
is to show that. So so it's going to be a great book. I'm excited, and I am impatient, but I want to make sure that it's right. Yeah, that's pretty much it.
I love it. So basically, it's your core beliefs and belief system on reaching maximum human potential.
Yes.
I love it. I love it. Guys, I mean, you know, the more I've been around Richard, the more you get to know this guy, you really start seeing the depths that he has. And, you know, just talking to him, you see how he's been able to accomplish what he's accomplished. You see how powerful he is. You know, even though the first time I ever met him, like, I literally had to do a double take. I'm like, hold on, that's the guy? Like, he's the powerlifter that you've been telling me about? That was an E-Fit, and it had to be probably like 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And I was just like, I was blown away. And from that point on, I was been like mesmerized with this guy's journey. And getting to know him, you understand why. Like, you understand how he's been able to accomplish these things, and you understand why he does what he does and why he's so passionate about it. So, Richard, where can people go to find out more?
You can go to YouTube at Richard Hawthorne. You can go to my Facebook. My fan page is Richard the Ant Hawthorne. And also, you can go to Instagram, which mm-hmm. I know you've probably seen. I've recently been hacked, and every last one of my followers, all, you know, 29,000 of them, are gone. So I had to restart, which is humbling, you know.
No, it is that.
It's definitely humbling, and it's sad at the same time. Mm-hmm. But you can find me there at Core Strong 101. I'm sorry, I said Core Strong 101. Core Strong 010, okay? And also, here in about a month, I'm going to launch my website, which is going to be tremendous. I'm excited about that.
Love it.
So,
love it. Guys, we'll put all the links to his social media and where to find him in the description below. But Richard, in closing, man, I want to thank you for the energy and the spirit you put out in the world. I mean, just being around this guy, you can literally feel it. You can feel his serving heart, and you can just feel how much he wants to give back and put back into the world. He's been given these amazing talents and gifts, but he's using them in the right way. You know, so many people use talents to get over on other people and take advantage of people, but this guy truly has a servant's heart. So I want to thank you and commend you for that, man. That's been something that's been awesome for me to watch. So guys, really appreciate you tuning in this week to yet another episode of Still the Fat Kid podcast. This is Robbie D'Angelo along with my amazing guest, Richard Hawthorne, proving to you yet again, the struggle is real.
And I'm stronger.